Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, July the 6th. We will talk this hour about last week's U.S. Supreme Court ruling that public schools cannot use race as a factor to either achieve or maintain the diversity of the student body. In a 5-4 opinion, the court invalidated programs in Seattle and Louisville that sought to maintain integrated schools by limiting transfers of students to other schools based on race or using race as a tiebreaker for admission to particular schools. Similar programs or integration plans are in place in hundreds of school districts around the country. What can they do now to maintain or achieve integration? Will this decision, as critics fear, lead to more segregated schools and unequal education, or an inferior education for all because of the lack of diversity of the student body? Will we see mostly white schools in affluent neighborhoods or mostly minority schools in poorer neighborhoods if race is not a factor in determining where a child goes to school? A listener suggested that we do something on this U.S. Supreme Court decision when I held an open line earlier this week. He suggested an author who lived in California. Well, we found an even better guest, one who lives in Wisconsin, and she will give us her analysis of this decision and what impact it will have on schools around the country and Wisconsin schools in particular. We will welcome your questions and reactions for her at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. You can also send your question or comment via email to talk@wpr.org. Mary Haywood Metz is a professor emerita of educational policy studies at UW-Madison, author of a couple of books that deal with this issue in general, Different by Design and Classrooms and Corridors. She joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
So this was a pretty significant decision.
This was a very significant decision, certainly for schools and also probably for the handling of race in the society at large. It is qualified somewhat by the concurring opinion of Judge Kennedy. Judge Kennedy said that what in the law is called a compelling state interest, that having integrated schools that are combined in race, is a compelling state interest. The four judges who wrote the plurality opinion did not see it as a compelling state interest, or at least not in these cases. And Judge Kennedy said that it is a compelling state interest, and that means that school districts are free to take steps to create racially mixed schools as long as they don't identify individual children by race and move them around according to create a particular racial balance. They can draw attendance lines to create racially mixed schools. They can create special programs to attract children of different races, things of that sort.
Yeah. Well, will a school district try to create these racially mixed schools if they're not looking at the race of a particular student? If you're drawing attendance lines, does that mean you draw the attendance line around a particular neighborhood that's got a high minority population?
It means you draw the attendance line in such a way that you include children of different colors. Now, that means children of different colors have to live near enough each other that you can do that. However, for example, in Madison, the pairing of Randall and Franklin and Midvale and Lincoln, which was created in response to the federal government noticing segregated schools here, I think that will have no problem because it's defined by neighborhood. It's not defined by the race of the individual child. So that remains legal.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain irony here because in the days of segregation, attendance area districts used to be drawn with very strange gerrymandered lines to maintain racial isolation. And now they're saying we can draw very strange gerrymandered lines to create integration.
Yeah. We need to take a weather break in just a minute or so, but you're disappointed with this decision? You're worried with this decision?
Yes, mm-hmm. I am definitely disappointed and definitely worried. The other kinds of measures that Judge Kennedy suggested are used in various places, but they're not very effective in creating racially mixed schools.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more about why you think that's something we should worry about after we check the weather. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your questions and comments about the U.S. Supreme Court ruling that public schools cannot use race as a factor to achieve or maintain the diversity of the student body. Our guest is Mary Haywood Metz, a professor emerita of educational policy studies at UW-Madison. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 17 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, July the 6th. John Munson is in for Ben Marins this afternoon between 4 and 6. Congress is poised to take up legislation to clean up the Great Lakes. After 5, John's guest from the National Wildlife Federation offers kudos on the policy, but not the delayed timeline. Talk about the Great Lakes coming up after 5 this afternoon. We are talking about the integration of our public schools and whether a recent U.S. Supreme Court decision last week, a 5-4 decision, will result in the re-segregation of our schools. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We are talking with a guest about the decision and wondering what it means for schools here in Wisconsin and around the country and what it means for education in general. Professor Metz is a professor emerita of educational policy studies at UW-Madison, and you can join us at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. You say that this decision worries you, disappoints you. Why should we all be worried about this decision and that we might not have schools that are as racially mixed as they are? Why should that worry us?
That should worry us because children learn how people learn how to get along with people who don't look like them and have different backgrounds from them most easily when they're children. There is a lot of evidence that when children go to racially mixed schools, especially in elementary school, that they live more integrated lives as adults. They're more likely to go to mixed colleges. They're more likely to live in mixed neighborhoods. They're more likely to work in mixed settings. And they're more likely to be at ease in doing that. So in a society that is approaching 40% people of color, no matter what color an individual is, they need to be comfortable with people of other colors. And if they don't learn that as children, if they grow up in segregated neighborhoods and go to segregated schools, it creates serious problems for understanding each other when we all live together as adults.
Yeah. We don't need to go into every last detail of these two programs in Seattle and Louisville that went before the U.S. Supreme Court. But in general, what the U.S. Supreme Court said in this split decision was unconstitutional was a school that would perhaps bus a minority student from a different neighborhood into a school and maybe the Caucasian students living in that neighborhood to another school. Isn't that generally what they're saying is wrong or shouldn't be done?
No, that's not quite what they're saying shouldn't be done. They're saying children should not be assigned to school based on the color of their skin. They are saying it's all right to bus them if they volunteer to be bused. Mm-hmm. It's all right to bus them, according to Justice Kennedy, if you draw the lines of an attendance area in such a way that it includes children of different races, even if it was a pretty big area. Now, a lot of this, just exactly what's acceptable, is going to have to be worked out through a lot of litigation in dissent, Justice Breyer argued that this will lead to a flurry of litigation, and I think it will.
Yeah, I think this in this particular case, one of them anyway, and it might have been Louisville, it was a white family that was upset because they wanted their daughter to attend a school very close to them, but she was denied admission because apparently there were enough white students already attending that school.
Yeah. It was actually a little worse than that. This was a kindergartner, and the family had moved into town fairly late. He had been assigned very far away, a very long bus ride, and a spot opened up in the neighborhood school, and the parents wanted to transfer him, and they said no because he was needed for the racial balance of the school where he was already assigned.
Mm-hmm.
So they found a case which most people would find outrageous. However, by the time the court actually ruled, the child had been transferred. It's one of those things where if you appeal, you're likely to win.
Yeah. We have a caller, George in Milwaukee. Hi, George. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I live in the city of Milwaukee, and our daughter went to Milwaukee Public Schools, in an integrated school, and to this day she says that was one of the best things that we could have done for her. So I am in favor of having integrated schools very much. However, practically speaking, one of the problems is that in most large cities, there's been de facto segregation for many years because the courts have ruled that city school districts cannot necessarily merge with suburban white districts in order to achieve more racial balance. So in Milwaukee right now, the minority population, if you would include African-American, Hispanic, and Asian, is probably about 85%. So there just aren't that many white kids left in the city to integrate. And so in a sense, the decision is somewhat moot in these kinds of situations.
Yeah. Professor Metz?
Yes, you're mentioning one of the very serious problems. Earlier Supreme Court decisions, Milliken in Detroit, made it impossible to integrate across district lines unless it could be proved that the other districts had conspired to create the segregation in the city. So for many years now, we have been trying to do desegregation with decreasing numbers of white children in the large cities. And in fact, even in cities that have a reasonable number of whites, like Louisville, which is a county system that includes the suburbs, when the patterns that have emerged since the late 1980s have been going backwards. We have more children in segregated schools now than we did 20 years ago. We're back to the levels of the late 1960s before the big push for desegregation, the practical flourishing of desegregation came in the 70s, not until 20 years after Brown. So indeed, very large children of both children of color and white children are in segregated schools. We have to remember an all-white school is also a segregated school or a predominantly white school. So you're absolutely right.
So this decision isn't going to affect Milwaukee and the suburbs?
This decision could affect Milwaukee and the suburbs because of the State 220 program. The assignment within Milwaukee is no longer by race, so the magnet schools in Milwaukee, for example, which are racially mixed with reasonable numbers, at least some of them, they won't be affected. But the 220 program, where children of color from Milwaukee are allowed to transfer to the suburbs and white children are allowed to transfer into Milwaukee, that does transfer children on the basis of their individual race. And I talked to some people yesterday to find out what was going on with that, and the answer was the lawyers are trying to sort it out. They don't know exactly what will happen, but certainly that program is one that will require reconsideration in light of this decision.
Yeah. Some are saying that this is a slap in the face of Brown versus the Board of Education. Is this going to lead us back to segregated schools?
Well, as the caller says, we're already on that path. Mm. It's going to make it harder to resist those forces. Yes, definitely.
1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest, Mary Haywood Metz, who is a professor emerita of educational policy studies at UW-Madison. As we examine the Supreme Court ruling last week that said public schools cannot use race to achieve integration, some are concerned that this is going to hurt education in this country. Others are saying that it's about time. We shouldn't be considering race. What's your reaction, Professor Metz, to Chief Justice Roberts saying that the way to stop discrimination on the basis of race is to stop discriminating on the basis of race?
I think that was a somewhat disingenuous one-liner. Chief Justice Roberts and the majority are arguing that the Constitution is colorblind and you should not take account of race even for purposes of improving racial relations. And to cite Brown as the source of that is, as Justice Stevens said, a cruel irony. One of the differences very clear in the opinions is that the justices in the majority take no account of the social context of Brown or of the current moment. It is simply a matter of a pristine principle of government not taking account of race. The justices in dissent point out that at the time of Brown, to talk about colorblind in the South, in the United States, where water fountains were determined by race, was simply nonsensical. That was not the intent of Brown.
Let's get a caller in before our news break. Lauren in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'd like to not only express my satisfaction with the court, but to express my conviction that all this talk about integration, which actually has led to the dilution of the standards in our schools, the fact that blacks and Latino students perform at much lower levels than whites is well known, will also reach the professors' universities. We will sue you into submission. Medicine was once an elite institution. Today is the butt of jokes. The law school admitted law. Yeah, the students who are not qualified, the University of Wisconsin is continuing to admit people who are not qualified simply because they are black or Latinos.
Yeah, I think we're getting a little bit far afield here, Lauren. Integration has led to a dumbing down of educational standards. Professor Metz, I think, is his main point, and unfortunately, you'll need a lot more time to answer that comment than we have before our news break. So let me have you think about that answer, and we will get to it after the news. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Friday, July the 6th. We are talking about last week's U.S. Supreme Court ruling that public schools cannot use race to achieve or maintain integration. We are talking with a guest to examine the impact of that decision on schools across the country and right here in Wisconsin. And we welcome your thoughts and questions on this decision and what it means. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is Mary Haywood Metz, Professor Emerita of Educational Policy Studies at UW-Madison. She has written a couple of books on this issue, Classrooms and Corridors and Different by Design. And Professor Metz, just before news time, we heard from a caller in Milwaukee who supported the Supreme Court decision and said that the emphasis on integration is leading to a downfall of educational standards, saying that anyway, that was his claim. Is he right?
No, I think he has his facts wrong. There are a lot of myths out there. In fact, a good deal of social science research has shown that in integrated schools, not only do Black and Latino students do better than in segregated schools, but white students do just as well in integrated schools as they do in segregated white schools on test scores, and they do better on critical thinking kinds of skills. And that makes sense when you think about the fact that students who are in a diverse environment are challenged to think in much more complex ways than students who are sitting next to other people who are exactly like them. Furthermore, Blacks and Latinos from integrated schools are more likely to graduate from high school and to go to college, and the result is a better educated workforce for all of us. So, in fact, racially mixed schools improve educational quality. They do not degrade educational quality.
Yeah. What is your fear? What consequences do you fear if schools no longer worry about having racially mixed schools?
I think it will lead to a deterioration of the quality of education in racially isolated schools for minority students. We know that those schools have more difficulty getting good teachers. They tend to be neglected by school districts. They don't have as good facilities, as good textbooks. The library isn't open in schools for poor kids, or it's open one day a week. It's open all week for children who, even within districts like Milwaukee, there's a difference in the way that schools are provisioned. And so it will lead to a deterioration in educational quality, to more discouragement in minority communities, and it will be very bad for the society. I also think it's bad for white children. White children need to understand the society into it that they're going to enter when they grow up. To live in an isolated suburb is to emerge naive and not well educated.
Yeah, your sons. You mentioned over the news break. Your sons went to the Milwaukee Public Schools for K through 12.
That's right. Both of my sons did. They both got an excellent education. They both went to private colleges in the East and found themselves well prepared. And they are now comfortable, no matter who they are dealing with. Even as teenagers, my older son had friends on the south side. We lived on the east side. He would ride the bus as a freshman and sophomore through the city mm-hmm. to go see his friends on a Friday night. The people he knew in the suburbs, we were in a church that was in the suburbs, they were afraid to go into the city. He could go to the suburbs. He could go to the city. And mm-hmm. that is still true for him as an adult.
Let's take some more calls. Paul in West Bend. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, thank you for taking my call. It's excellent timing, I think, that you've touched on some of these other points. And by that, I mean the need for the better educated, yet perhaps a little more naive, largely white suburban kids to interact more and realize that the culture and the experience of the largely, you know, African-American inner-city child is, you know, almost 180 degrees different. And I guess I had two comments very quickly, and then I'll jump off. The first one is I fear that the Supreme Court decision really just reflects more of the polarization that we're seeing. And it's disturbing to me as a 44-year-old man who grew up in rural Wisconsin to realize that in so many ways we're going backwards instead of forwards in terms of our relationships with other people, and not just within our country but outside our country. And then the second thought I had is the issue is really one of resources more than anything else. And, you know, I would point to private schools like Milwaukee Marquette in particular, and some of the others, I'm thinking maybe perhaps of Milwaukee Pius, that are really, if they're not in Milwaukee, they're very close to Milwaukee, and yet they draw this robust and strong student population, excellent education. And the reason is because there's a commitment there among those families of the children that are going to school there, or the young people that are going to school there, to provide those schools with resources and a tradition that speaks of excellence. And I think until the Milwaukee public school system is given the opportunity to play on the same playing field with the suburban white schools, the question of resources is always going to be there, and that simply is going to be that the kids are not going to go from the suburb into the city to go to school if the resources are not there. And so I'll take your response after this, but thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks for the call. Do you have a response for him, Professor Metz?
Yes. As I've said, we agree on the issue of isolation. The issue of resources takes us into some other areas than desegregation. But it is very important that funding for schools is based on the tax base in a school district. And there is clear evidence that cities in this country have, or urban areas, have been intentionally segregated both in race and in social class, with the encouragement of the federal government after World War II, so that the suburbs have a much higher tax base. Now, it depends. Working class suburbs obviously have a lower tax base than the upper middle class suburbs. So the southern suburbs of Milwaukee have a lower tax base than the northern and many of the western suburbs. But that means that we are funding education according to the wealth of the families, and those communities are set up with ordinances about lot size and multiple family occupancy that perpetuate economic differences, and that perpetuates differences in educational resources, and it makes a huge difference for children. That is not equality of opportunity.
Thank you very much, Paul, for the call. Next we go to Bernie in Whitewater. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, good morning. This was one of the few Supreme Court decisions of late that I agreed with. I don't think we're ever going to get beyond race when we categorize people by race. And I think you're right on about the funding of schools. I think that we need to fund them at the state level, at least, if not the national, so that we can get rid of these inequities between tax bases and districts. But I think definitely that to be busing a child, despite, you know, some good effects as in your children that you cited, is a very bad idea. It's a bad idea environmentally, consumption of gasoline, taking hours out of kids' days to get out of their neighborhood. You need to improve the schools wherever they're bad, to whatever degree that can be done, because the schools are not independent of the home situation. But you got to focus on improving the schools, and doing this artificial, you know, integration by busing is just one of the worst ideas imaginable. And, you know, I have to admit, one of the few Supreme Court decisions I found worthy.
Professor Metz?
Can I ask you, have your children been in desegregated schools?
My wife raised a daughter on her own, and when she was raising her daughter, she had to go through hoops living on the south side of Milwaukee to avoid her being bused. And she eventually ended up sending her to Pius, you know, just simply trying to avoid that whole busing thing.
Well, there is good evidence in surveys of parents that those parents whose children have been in desegregated schools are far more positive about desegregated schools than those parents whose children have not been in desegregated schools. Now, some desegregated schools are not well run, but if a school is well run, on the whole, the people, both the children and the parents, find it a good experience. And of course, a 3-hour bus ride, I mean, a very long bus ride is not a sensible thing, but a relatively short bus ride is a chance to hang out with your friends. It's not such a bad thing. And it is well worth what you get on the other end of it. And I think we find that people who actually have been there are far more positive than people who have not.
We're going to check our weather forecast for today and the weekend, and then we'll continue talking about the Supreme Court ruling on public schools saying they cannot use race to achieve or maintain diversity or integration. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you along. Hope you stay tuned. Coming up after 8 o'clock, it's our Week in Review. Two guests from different perspectives to talk with you about the big news of the week, political news of the week, state, national, and international news, reviewed in our Week in Review after 8 o'clock. We are talking with Mary Haywood Metz, a professor emerita of educational policy studies at UW-Madison, talking about the Supreme Court decision that says public schools cannot use race as a factor in programs meant to maintain or create diversity and integration. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Nick in Eau Claire is with us next. Hi, Nick. You're on the air.
Hello. I just wanted to make a comment that I can believe in principle that people who express themselves as believing in a colorblind society can possibly be sincere, but I don't really believe it is often the case, because in particular the same people rarely are in favor of a very strict enforcement of civil rights laws. And I just thought it might be worth throwing in that comment.
It might, but can you relate it? I mean, link it up to this Supreme Court decision and integrated schools, Nick?
Well, in particular, then, the situation should be that, of course, we're colorblind, and therefore we should, in addition to avoiding using race in the schools balancing things out, we should also be pushing, if we were consistent, we should also be pushing to make sure that schools that just happen to be largely minority are extremely well provided for in terms of facilities and teachers. Mm. And it seems to me that there's a push in the one direction, which is don't force me to integrate my school, but on the other hand, we're not at the same time working terribly hard to make sure that all the schools, including the ones that are largely one race, especially darker skinned people, have terrific facilities and excellent teachers.
Professor Metz?
Well, I think when you read the text of the Supreme Court decisions, it's very clear that the justices in the plurality in particular speak only of abstract principle, and the justices in dissent speak about conditions in the world as it is. So for the previous caller, I would agree it would be wonderful if all children could go to their neighborhood school, if those schools were racially mixed and equally provided for. But it's much easier to do social policy to correct injustices of resources and of racial isolation in the schools than in real estate. And that's why the NAACP chose schools as the place to attack the whole Jim Crow system in the South in 1954, because schools are a public agency that can be controlled from the center of at least each district, whereas housing decisions are so decentralized that it's very difficult to get at them. If we could have desegregated neighborhoods with equal resources, hooray, we wouldn't have to do any of this with schools.
Do you see this decision and schools perhaps, you know, scrambling with how to deal with this decision, that there could be an effort to correct these resource inequities that we see in neighborhood schools?
I think that could be part of the silver lining in this decision. We could say, all right, if we're going to be colorblind, we need to be sure that all schools get the same resources. Mm-hmm. That the logic that the caller mentions is a very important one. And that argument can be made. I think the caller has a point that a lot of people who are feel very strongly about colorblindness do feel less strongly about equality of resources. But that is a principle on which they can be pushed.
Yeah. And as far as you know, through the short time since we've had this decision, schools in Madison and Milwaukee are not going to be thrown for a loop by this decision. They don't have to go back to the drawing board because what they're doing is not necessarily violating what the Supreme Court said?
I think that's right. I think within the District of Madison and within the District of Milwaukee, there won't be any change. In those two communities, the only program that will have to be looked at by the lawyers is the 220 exchange program.
Mm-hmm. Louise in Hillsboro. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes. I was going to say that, as evidenced by the caller a few calls back there, you know, attitudes of bigotry are still alive and well in this country, and to ignore that is both naive and downright dangerous, I think. As someone who went to very segregated schools growing up and then got to college and got into an integrated environment and was immeasurably enriched by that, I think it's a sad day. And I'll take comments off the air. Thank you.
All right. Professor Metz?
I have seen that with my college students. A lot of the students in the School of Education come from small towns in Wisconsin or from suburbs of Milwaukee, Minneapolis, Chicago, and they really have had almost no interracial experience. I particularly remember one class where I had a student who was a African-American football player who was willing to talk. And he told us about a whole lot of things from his point of view, and the students just loved it. If I'd said it, they would have yawned. But when he said it, they really believed it. And it was a tremendous educational experience for them. I think of another story with a different African-American football player who told us two stories, one about a four-year-old who asked him, "Why are you brown?" And he sent her home to ask her father. And she came back the next day and explained to him all about how melanin works. That was a charming story. Mm-hmm. He also told us a story about two girls who came up to him, two white girls in the cafeteria, and said, "We're sorry if we were staring at you, but we've never seen a black person before." That was not a charming story. And it really wasn't the girls' fault. They should have asked those questions when they were four.
I want to get one more caller in at least. Tom in Bayfield County. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Yeah, I go along with the Supreme Court's decision. I think there are too many people trying to tinker with natural humanity. There's nothing wrong with people staying in their own neighborhood. I think that the person who you're interviewing there probably has never volunteered her time to go and spend a whole career in one school or another. But that's beside the point.
Yeah.
I would think, as I said before, I think we're birds of a feather flock together.
Well, what's wrong with people just staying in their own neighborhoods with their own people, I think Tom said, and going to their neighborhood schools?
May I ask what color you are?
We got to fix the schools without forcing people down other people's throats. And we can fix the schools by getting good teachers in the school, and they ought to be funded appropriately. And this can be done at various levels of government by other laws rather than just running all these buses around and so forth. And there's a much better way to do it as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, people don't like that busing aspect. We got an email from Marge who says that our children should be in integrated schools. However, neighborhoods should be integrated and children should not be bused. What about that?
Well, I think the caller needs to remember that in the Seattle case, the issue was that parents were fighting to get into these schools, into these desegregated schools, and some of the white parents were angry that they couldn't get into them. Mm. So it was a question of their wanting to get into what they saw as a better school, and they were quite willing to go to a racially mixed school, but they didn't want to have a racial quota because they thought that not having it would advantage them in getting into that school. So I think it's easy to say we should flock together when you are in the privileged group, when you are in the group that is locked out of many things. It's much more difficult. As the dissenters said in the Supreme Court, when race is used to exclude, it's as it is in many parts of our society, including housing in metropolitan areas, then we need to use race to include.
Well, we are out of time. Professor Metz, I want to thank you for coming in, and I hope we can talk again now that you're retired.
Thank you, Joy.
Yeah, Mary Haywood Metz, Professor Emerita of Educational Policy Studies at UW-Madison. Thanks to Leo Duran for producing this hour and to Christina Taylor for on-air production. And let me also thank Cheryl Gasser and Christina Taylor for all of their work in our previous hour. If you would like a CD copy of this or any of our talk shows, call the radio store, 1-800-747-7444, or you can listen to any of our talk shows. They are archived on our website, wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.